Welcome to the Pulitzer Rhode Island podcast, a companion to the collaborative series of programs titled, What is the 21st Century Essay? This series is facilitated by the Rhode Island Council for the Humanities to commemorate the 100th anniversary of the Pulitzer Prizes in 2016. By asking, what is the 21st century essay, we aim to explore the changing nature of journalism and the humanities in the digital age, and how writers, scholars, journalists, artists, and others are adapting, shaping, and innovating. The series thematically focuses on environmental issues because of their urgency and relevance to our health, communities, and economy. This podcast will feature journalists, scholars, practitioners, and Rhode Island community members joining us to explore the intersections of journalism, the humanities, and the environment. Please visit rihumanities.org/Pulitzer for more information. Hello and welcome to the Pulitzer in Rhode Island podcast. I'm Elizabeth Francis, Executive Director of the Rhode Island Council for the Humanities. Our guest today is author Margot Jefferson. Margot is a Pulitzer Prize-winning cultural critic. She is the author of On Michael Jackson and Negroland, a memoir. Negroland was chosen as one of 2015's best books by the Washington Post, the New York Times and Time Magazine, and won the 2016 National Book Critics Circle Award in Autobiography. She currently lives in New York and teaches at Columbia University. Recently, Margot Jefferson was keynote speaker at the 10th annual Ocean State Summer Writing Conference on the campus of the University of Rhode Island in June. We are grateful to Associate Professor of English Martha Elena Rojas of URI for inviting Margot Jefferson to be a part of the conference and the Humanities Council's Pulitzer Series, What is the 21st Century Essay? Margot, thank you for talking with me today and for participating in the Ocean State Summer Writing Conference.
Well, the conference was a pleasure, and I expect our conversation to be as well.
That's great. And it's wonderful to be able to have your insight and perspective be available to a wider audience. So we're really grateful for that. So we are, as you know, our Pulitzer in Rhode Island series is asking a question. It's a question that we don't know what the answer is. And that is in part why we are inviting different participants to help address that. And the question is, what is the 21st century essay? So I wanted to ask you a series of questions that will help us kind of think through that. And one of the sort of key themes that we're really trying to get at is, what is the connection between journalism and the humanities as both fields really change a great deal? And I think you probably have a lot of thoughts about that.
Well, it's interesting and it is complicated because, you know, they're often in a slightly combative relationship, meaning scholars, let us say. The scholars of what we think of as, you know, humanities in the traditional sense, tend to suspect journalists of being a little of listening towards the superficial. And journalists tend to accuse scholars of, a kind of rarefied specialization that can seal them off from the here and now. Mm-hmm. So to me, and, you know, you must remember, I've spent my life as a critic journalist rather than, let's say a news reporter or whatever. So to me, the ties, the interactions were inevitable. Yes, the here and now for any reviewer, any critic, And you know, therefore a journalist, the here and now is the catalyst. Whether it's a book, a movie, a piece of music, or whether it's you know, some trend, some event, some you know, cultural phenomenon that's you know, sweeping sweeping us up and sweeping over us. But the material you know, that you shape in writing about, in approaching, in thinking about, and in rendering, even sensorily with your prose, that event, that stuff all comes from, it's the humanities, it's the history that you bring to it. Let's say the history of genre, if you're writing about, you know, anything from romantic comedy to hip hop to whatever. It's the history of a genre. It's how it's been. It's the history of how it's been interpreted, how it's emerged. It's the looking, examining of hierarchies within and between art forms. Mm-hmm. You know, you are interpreting, and you need a lot of approaches to that. You might find yourself, you know, bringing some anthropological insight, you know, to a piece you're writing. You know, you have to always be attuned to what all of these, what we call them, you know, we call them disciplines traditionally, but all these modes of inquiry and of investigation and of journalists call it research, you know, scholars tend to call it documentation, research, documentation, investigation, primary, secondary. You know, you need to always be able to bring that to the here and now, the piece of art, the piece of the work, the thought.
Yeah, I and it strikes me that when you cast it in terms of the here and now, that the relationship becomes sort of more fundamental, and that interpretation and inquiry seem like things that we're sorely lacking in the here and now, and that by having a tighter relationship between that dimension of the humanities and journalism, that we can have a richer, deeper, perhaps more productive dialogue about the here and now.
Yeah, yeah. Investigation, inquiry, and examination. And I would say that would include self-examination. Mm-hmm. So for a critic, a journalist can very easily fall into, you know, this is my persona, this is my mode, this is what I'm known for, and this becomes the approach
right
that I bring to, you know, so to continually be investigating that and you know, looking, bringing new material to that, examining, questioning, contesting the history of your own responses and approaches and preferences.
I think that is so interesting. And what you're saying echoes in really interesting ways. Another one of the authors who's been part of the series, Stephen Henderson, who defined what he saw as the 21st century essay as a kind of recursiveness of going back and reexamining and looking again at what was informing him, how he was defining himself. So that, I think, you know, so it's really interesting that you're both landing on that dimension of a new journalism. And it strikes me, and I'm kind of moving into the second question, the essay is something that you've given a lot of thought to, and that it seems to really be your form in many ways. Although, you know, how you define that would be most interesting to hear about. But how do you see how you do things, and a journalism that is what we call long form, or a journalism of inquiry and interpretive and reflective thought. How do you see your work changing as a result of multiple media, what we call the digital age? How would you, and it seems to me that in, your work really shifts voice, it shifts perspectives, and that seems really important to the meaning that you're making, and sort of how do you negotiate that across, this media landscape that we find ourselves in?
Well, I'm hoping to negotiate it much more actively in the future, because what interests me in particularly about what we'll call traditional long-form journalism and digital forms is there the opportunity to set several dialogues in motion. You have the visual and the verbal, obviously, but you have each platform has its own language, as in a sense each genre does, its own slang, its own formal demands, and I don't just mean, the number of characters that can go into a tweet. I really mean even how readers become accustomed to how, a Facebook entry, captures their attention, how, a blog is shaped. So, all of that becomes extremely interesting. It means that you can have multiple forms, really, of an essay that you are writing. There is the traditional book form. There can be an online form that it is in conversation with. That could include not only visuals, but also music.
Yeah. So are you thinking about that for your own work, Marvin?
Yeah, I really am. I have thought, for example, that I would like at some point to take my memoir, Negroland, and score it, actually. I would love to do that.
Wow. And
do with other, other essays too.
Are you thinking about something on the stage too, or more of a, like an opera or something?
No, I've thought of it as scoring it, online. Actually.
Oh, okay.
Really having musical, accompaniment that, any viewer can go to. I have also thought of, because some of the early versions of Negroland really came from the theater piece I was doing. So I have also thought of a stage version. It's interesting about the essay. There are essayistic films, there are essayistic plays. Because it's a form, it's a mode of inquiry, very grounded, maybe implicitly, if your subject is not blatantly yourself. Maybe it's grounded very implicitly just in the intimacy of your style. With an essay, the reader cannot, the reader is pushed right up next to voice. There is not that kind of scrim that academic writing or conventional journalism adds.
So that both the reader and the writer are both right there in it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And if it's a personal essay, of course, you're literally inside the mind. And there's a late piece that Virginia Woolf wrote. She was actually doing a kind of history of English literature. And she was in writing about the transition from the theater as the dominant form to the essay as an emerging powerful form. She called the essay the theater of the brain. And I think that's great.
Oh, I love that.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, it is. So one of the aspects of this particular series that we're doing here in Rhode Island to commemorate the Pulitzer Prizes is we wanted to connect it with a theme, a motivating theme, and that theme is the environment. But we do conceive of that as very broad, and it can include lots of different dimensions of the meaning of that word. It can be personal and social, material, psychological. It could be about the earth. It could be about climates. And I wonder how you think about that in relation to your writing practice and, you know, how you're thinking about not only what you have written, but what you're thinking about writing. If you want to just kind of riff on that for a moment.
Yeah, well, I'm going to pick up two words of yours and start riffing with them. I do think of cultural environments, and there are cultural toxins. There are great cultural shifts that feel very dangerous and perilous and are. You know, there are sudden changes in the cultural landscape that, you know, there's psychological weather, in fact. You know, culture is an entire environment. It's its own earth, if you will, yes. And surrounded by it and immersed in it at all times. And in my work, I like to think when I'm really doing it that I am, first of all, you know, in investigating and revealing all of the, as many as I can, of the elements that make up that environment and what their qualities are and what their habits are and how this particular species, let us say, is came to be very privileged, and another, something on the environment came to be less so, and how that has very much thrown off the balance of how I feel we might want to live and think and experience beauty and pleasure and excitement, that kinetic excitement that every form of culture gives us.
I think that is so evocative, and also I wish that aspect of how we think about the environment was part of all of these discussions. I think it would make the serious policy issues that we face and the very real devastation that we face much more, as we've said before, intimate and connected to, everyday life. I think that's one of the challenges that we face is how to think about change and not fear it, and to try to create a future that we actually want.
And to collaborate in these ways that will sustain and if need be, alter the damage being done.
Yes.
To the psychic, to the natural, to all of these, and to the political environment.
Yeah, I think those are important connections. If you could just kind of cast your mind back to June 24th, when you were in Rhode Island and at the conference, what did you think about the ideas and questions that were raised there? And what would you say you've held on to or thought about more, or that surprised you, after having been at that conference at URI?
Several things, I would say. One, and these aren't in order of pride or preference. One, the precision, the detail with which people asked about and talked about with each other and with me, craft, technique, how to find ways to say what you wanted to say, what you wanted to ask, and the joy they felt, in these craft discussions. Also, the intimate links, and this goes back to what we were saying in the beginning, the intimate ties I felt between the scholars in the community and the writers. and the scholars who were just as committed to, you know, to the felicities and the complexities of their prose as any, you know, novelist or essayist, and the intellectual ambitions of the writers, you know, the memoir writers, the whatever.
In that sense, I thought Marty's introduction was a beautiful example of that.
Oh my God, Marty's introduction was sublime. I thought, oh my goodness, I am hearing a first-rate creative scholar's reading of a writer and text, and how lucky could I possibly be that this writer happens to be me and the texts are mine. It was just wondrous.
Yeah, it really was. I'm hoping that we're going to be able to circulate that as part of the series. And I just think it was a beautiful encapsulation of what we're trying to accomplish through this series in Rhode Island. And that it was, the conference overall seems like a great, this bringing together of scholars and writers seems like a very generative context to move the goals of the Pulitzer forward. And that's really what we're hoping to do, is to have that be a very active, inquiring approach, and you know, as well as a celebration.
No, I think that's absolutely terrific, because you don't always find that active collaboration and fusion of the two at conferences of any sort. So that really struck me and stayed with me and excited me.
That's great.
Made me more ambitious.
That's great to hear. Maybe we can lure you back at some point.
Lure on.
Okay.
Pleasure.
All right. Well, Margot, I think we're wrapping up now. We know that there's a limit to the listener of the podcast and their attention. So I think this is...
It's its own form, too.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. And I want to thank you so very much for taking the time and talking with me today, and for reflecting on your experience and participation at the Ocean State Summer Writing Conference and being part of this Pulitzer series in Rhode Island.
Oh, thank you. You know, we say it was an honor glibly, but I'm saying it seriously.
That's great. All right. Well, thank you so very much.
Thank you.